Hello, my name's Faye Morrissey and I'm from the Armit Museum in Ambleside. I'm delighted to introduce for this first talk in the Charlotte Mason event series, Margaret Coombs. Margaret is the author of Charlotte Mason, Hidden Heritage and Educational Influence. Very warm welcomes to you, Margaret.
Well, I hadn't heard of Charlotte Mason until I was looking into researching education for parenthood and fetched up at the British Library and came across the journal she'd started, Parents Review. And that was the start of a very long process. First of all, doing a thesis about Charlotte Mason, and then deciding after some time that I must write a new biography, which finally came out in 2015.
Wow, so you've been looking into and researching Charlotte Mason for quite some time then.
I have indeed, in different ways. And I became more and more interested in the secret parts of her life, that she didn't reveal anything about who were her parents or where she came from.
Oh, so this is going to be quite an interesting talk today. This is the start of our Charlotte Mason talk series for this special centenary year, and we're really digging deep into her early life. So perhaps, first of all, Margaret, you can tell us a bit about where Charlotte Mason grew up.
Yes, and I think people have judged her by her educational theories and what she did, and it's very important to have the background to that. Well, it's quite difficult to say where Charlotte Mason grew up, but I have discovered that she was born, and there was confirmation of this, she was born in Bangor, Carnarvon, living with her mother. I think I perhaps better say at this point that her mother wasn't married to her father. Perhaps I'll say how she came to be pregnant with Charlotte. Do you think we need to know that, Faye?
Well, perhaps our listeners will be very interested to know that, so why not?
Yes. So I think I better say that Charlotte was the daughter of a young woman, very beautiful young woman called Margaret Shaw, who was in her early 20s. And she had somehow met Charlotte's father, who had been living in Carlow, and somehow they had a relationship. Joshua Mason then went off to America with his son Joseph without, I think, being aware that he'd impregnated Margaret Shaw. Yes. So Margaret Shaw was left wondering what on earth to do, but fortunately she knew a relative of Joshua Mason and went to her.
So we've already got a bit of scandal in there, and Charlotte Mason's not even been born yet.
And, well, as I think I must say now, Joshua Mason, in fact, had already fathered 12 children in two marriages. He was a birthright Quaker, and he married his boss's daughter for the first marriage, and then he married again some years later when his first wife died.
Ah.
He was rather lonely, I think, living in Carlow, working as a miller, which he didn't find at all easy. He trained in something quite different. And then suddenly Charlotte was on the way, but he was miles away in America.
Ah, so is that why your talk is titled The 13th Child?
Well, because he'd had 8 children by his first marriage, and 9 children by his, he had 8 children by his first marriage and 4 children by his second marriage.
Gosh, so he's got around a bit as Joshua. And you've told us a bit about Charlotte's mother and father now. So perhaps a little bit more after she was born, what happened in her early life?
Well, I think when Margaret Shaw found that she was pregnant, it's difficult to know where she actually came from, but I have a feeling she may have had links with Birkenhead, but she may well have met Joshua in Ireland in Carlow, and had met his daughter, Huldah Jane, who had married and moved to Bangor in Carnarvon, because the records after much research, showed that Charlotte's been born in Bangor, Carnarvon.
Right.
And so they must have stayed with the Doyle family. That's Huldah Jane and her husband, Peter Doyle.
Okay. And why...
Sorry, I'm being a bit dull, I think.
No. But why do you think she had such a sort of childhood that caused them to move around so much?
Yes. Well, I don't know how long she knew Joshua Mason for. I mean, I wondered if she'd worked for him in the house or how they met. One other possibility is that he may have been travelling through Birkenhead to place his youngest son in school nearby. Mm. And he might have just met her, because I did see in the records that Margaret Shaw worked as at a pub in Birkenhead.
Mm.
Now, I didn't put this in the book because there was no evidence for it, but I did wonder about it, whether Joshua Mason met her when having a quiet drink in a certain road in Birkenhead.
Perhaps so, and perhaps we'll never know.
This is something we'll never know, I'm afraid.
Yes. So what happened when Charlotte Mason was born? Where were her parents living, and what did her younger days entail?
Well, what was rather good was that Huldah Jane must have written to her father Joshua, and so he started the long journey to return. Meanwhile, I think Charlotte and her mother lived with the Doyles for a short while, and then. Whether or not they moved to Birkenhead, I don't know. There's no sort of direct evidence for that. The Doyles then went to Dublin, and then we hear that when Joshua Mason arrived back, we hear that her Margaret Shaw, in fact, was living in Dublin in the parish of the church where they married. So Joshua Mason obviously was a very honourable man,
mm-hmm.
and he came back to do his bit by this young woman. Now, the problem they faced was that she was a Catholic, a born and bred Roman Catholic, and he was a birthright Quaker. And so he would have known that by marrying a Catholic young woman, he would be cut off from the Quakers, and that is what he had to face.
Right.
But they got married in 1844. That's 2 years after Charlotte Mason was born.
Yes. So was Joshua still with his other family up until that point?
No, he'd left. Some of his children had already died by then, the older children, and he had left. He had decided to leave Carlow then, and his children had grown up. Two of his daughters of the second marriage became teachers, so they were relatively independent.
Okay. And what do you think Charlotte Mason's early years with her parents from the point onwards of their marriage in 1844 was like?
Well, this is where we come up into difficulties, because there's the first biography about Charlotte Mason, The Story of Charlotte Mason by Essex Chumley, they paint a picture of Charlotte and her parents living in Liverpool, not Birkenhead. Liverpool was more respectable and lively, and spending a lot of time in the Isle of Man. Now, I think Charlotte did spend some time in the Isle of Man, because for the first census, she said that her birth, she got the date wrong, but she said she had been born in the Isle of Man. But I have no... That's one of something people could research further. I've not discovered any evidence of their living in the Isle of Man, but that would require an extensive visit there, I think. So they come back and land up in Birkenhead. So her early years have really been spent, first of all, in Dublin, and she never confessed to being Irish, I might say, and then living in Birkenhead. Joshua Mason has been a successful businessman. and did have the freedom to trade with Liverpool merchants. So possibly he was able to continue that, but I think he was getting old and rather short of money by that stage. But there they were in Birkenhead.
So at this point, Charlotte's still obviously a young girl growing up, and how does she get onto this path of education, and who's helping to inspire her on this journey?
Well, the first biography suggests that her parents taught her at home, and they've got a lot of rather charming pictures of her doing it. I think her father, both her father and mother were great readers, and I think her father introduced her to a lot of books. There's a very nice passage in one of her books about she was absolutely gripped listening to Walter Scott's Anne of Gerstein being read to her when she was at the age of 11. So I think the idea that Joshua Mason was a well-educated man who read, it must be true, and that's probably true of her mother as well. But at this point, they were beginning to grow apart, and Charlotte's mother, Margaret, was fortunate in that she doesn't appear to have been condemned by the local Catholic Church, and she started resuming attending services there, whereas Joshua was cut off from his beloved, his beloved, gosh,
his Quaker period.
Beloved Quakers, because he did a lot with the Quakers throughout his life, you know.
Mm. And so who else was perhaps inspiring her in these early years? So we've talked about her mother and father were obviously instilling the enjoyment of reading literature, gaining knowledge. But was there anybody else around this time that was inspiring her to take up improving education for others?
Well, as they had no money, there was only one way in which she could get educated, and that was with the state system, which is something she had to keep quiet about. So I think it's very likely that her father arranged for her to attend this local school and then eventually to become a pupil teacher, because the fathers were the people who were supposed to do that. Pupil teaching was very tough, but Charlotte Mason was very lucky in a way, because in spite of all this difficulty, there were some relatives around in Birkenhead, but she apparently didn't want to have anything to do with them. But she was quite lucky in that there was a very dynamic vicar at the local church, they were obviously living in the parish, which she would have attended. And he, funnily enough, had been a Quaker before he became ordained as an Anglican priest, later a Doctor of Divinity. And he was very active in setting up schools. And eventually he went on to found a college for clergy. And so Charlotte, as a pupil teacher, as a student and then as a pupil teacher, would have had to have attended the local church, Holy Trinity. And so she would have heard Dr. Bailey preaching. And she probably also heard all about them founding this college over the years she was there.
So really, she was very lucky and was very fortunate to have these people around her, a mother and father, and the doctor at the church, vicar at the church, helping her along this path, really.
The trouble was that her parents were then getting ill, and they both died before she left school. I think her father's mind had begun to go, and he moved away from Birkenhead to Liverpool, where Huldah Jane and Peter Doyle, near to where Huldah Jane and Peter Doyle had fetched up. And her mother was ill. Charlotte said mother was beautiful, always an invalid, and her mother was very ill, and she died at only the age of 40. She was a lot younger than Joshua, who was well into his 70s when he died.
Gosh, so that has to be something that, within very early childhood still, for Charlotte Mason to overcome. And you think these things, last with people through that time. Do you think that's one of the troubles or difficulties Charlotte had to overcome, is losing her parents?
Oh, she does indeed. And I think Huldah Jane asked one of her sisters, Hannah, who'd also got married to a man who was very keen on nature, and who they moved into Birkenhead, and Charlotte did mention that she lived with an uncongenial relative while she was a pupil teacher, but I don't think that lasted very well, because pupil teachers had to, women pupil teachers had to clean out the classrooms as well as studying with the teacher when they'd finished teaching, and then they also had to do housework when they got home. So I don't think she lasted with her half-sister Hannah for very long, and there was a mention of this uncongenial relative. And so I think she probably moved in with the infant school teacher, who unfortunately died at the end of that year, not long after both her parents had died. So that was extremely traumatic. And so we see that Charlotte Mason is emerging as someone who, in spite of all these tremendous difficulties, somehow managed to learn to be a very good teacher. And what was very fortunate for her was the staff at the school had all trained at the Home and Colonial College, which was one of the best teacher training colleges.
So you've just brought up the Ho and Co, as it was fondly known. So how did Charlotte come to get a scholarship there?
Yes, well, they would have put her up for the Queen's Scholarship, and the advantage of that was then your fees were paid. And I think it's pretty brilliant that she got a second-class scholarship. It's possible that was because she was teaching infants, or it could be that she just got a second-class scholarship, but she got it in spite of all these difficulties, and so moved to London to train at the Ho and Co. But nobody was allowed to know that she'd had this state education, even to the extension of training at the Ho and Co. There were a number of teacher training colleges, but they were for people who were not from the highest classes in society.
Why do you think that was? Why do you think she kept her cards close to her chest about these things?
Well, I think there were two reasons. One is that it sort of labelled her as from the poorer classes. And the other is that later on, when she formulated her own ideas, she didn't really want people to think that she had been influenced by other theorists. For example, the Ho and Co very much taught Pestalozzi and Froebel and one or two other people. And Charlotte later on in life denied that she'd had, she'd had that training, really, that her ideas had come to her by herself.
I think Charlotte Mason as an individual is really quite interesting and remarkable, a remarkable lady who's gone through a number of difficulties to get to where she did in later life and all that she achieved. But coming back to, not wanting to go on too much about the scandal and interest around her early life, but in addition to why she didn't divulge her state education perhaps, but why do you think she was generally so secretive perhaps about her early life? Was there an element of shame, or was she embarrassed?
Well, I mean she was born before her parents were married. We don't absolutely know whether she knew this. She was she was four when her father, so that's just about old enough to notice when her father reappeared in her life. So she probably did know that her parents weren't married when she was born, so that was embarrassing enough, really. He'd had quite good jobs, but he was a tallow chandler and soap boiler. That's what he trained in. They're very necessary services when there were no electricity and you needed your tallow candles to light your home. But perhaps she didn't want to mention that. He then went on to be a miller, but she may not even have known that, of course. But I think it was probably that that she was born out of wedlock.
Very interesting indeed. I mean, we don't want to go on too much because you do have another part to tell about her story later on. But perhaps you could just finish off by telling us a little bit about why you have found Charlotte Mason so interesting and why you have decided and you wrote this book, Charlotte Mason, Hidden Heritage and Educational Influence. What do you think it is that's inspired you about Charlotte Mason?
Yes, I mean, I think I landed up with Charlotte Mason, but I've able to see more clearly that she was a very intelligent, quite a sort of forceful person, although she was also very dependent on the support of friends, and she had, you know, quite a lot of illnesses and needed to be supported through that. But I think it's the way she sort of fought her way up by very good friendships. I mean, she didn't manage to last out her college course, and I think that was because she was asked to talk about the lesson in front of her other students, and I think that really upset her, so she burst into tears. And of course, then tears were seen as a sign of illness. So she ended up, after this just 1 year in college, being the head of the infant school in Worthing, where, again, she got a great deal of support from people. So it's, I suppose the interest is in looking how this young woman who started off in life with tremendous difficulties to face gradually worked her way through and learned as she went along as to how to develop her own ideas. I mean, she moved from infant school teaching to teaching students and so on and moving right up the scale. And I think at first I underestimated her intelligence and also her stamina.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much, Margaret. I think that's a lovely note to end on because there is certainly more to come. I do hope our listeners will tune in for more of the talks coming up shortly and to attend your next part of the talk, which will be later on in the year in September. So thank you very much for speaking with us today, and we hope to see you again next time.
Thanks very much, Faye. Thank you.